Unio is an interactive lesson delivery and assessment platform designed with teachers to promote excellence in teaching and learning. Based around shared online screens between teachers and students, Unio makes it easy to personalise learning and assess progress at a glance. You can sign up for a free account on Unio by visiting www.uniobyharness.com. Here's a word from Class Central, the most popular search and review site for online courses. If you've ever gone on the hunt for a great online course from a top university, then you may already know about Class Central. Class Central is the most comprehensive search engine for MOOCs and online courses. The site lists over 10,000 courses and allows you to search by subject, university, keyword, and language of instruction. With tens of thousands of user reviews, you can use Class Central to help you decide if a course is right for you. And if you're into geeking out about online learning like I am, you'll love diving into Class Central's MOOC report. The MOOC report covers everything that's going on in the MOOC space, with news, analysis, and opinions about the fascinating world of online courses. A great place to start is with Class Central's in-depth analysis of the state of MOOCs in 2017. You can find a link in our show notes. Or if you're interested in finding out which courses are ranked the highest, check out Class Central's course rankings for the month and the year, or have a look at the top 50 MOOCs of all time. Everyone, big news! The sun is shining in London and the birds are tweeting. Spring has finally sprung. This week we are looking at CPD and online learning and tutoring, in conversation with Kat Scutt, Director of Education and Research at the Chartered College of Teaching, and Aldo De Pap, CEO of TeachPitch, both recorded at BET 2018. Listen in if you're interested in how to get into online tutoring or improving your digital hand as an educator. And do feedback via Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. This week we also say goodbye and thank you to intern Vanessa Gay, who travels back to the US. And thank you to Unio by Harness and Class Central for sponsoring this week's episode. If you would like to sponsor the podcast, do ask us for more info via the website. I'm busy finalising the programme for the EdTech Podcast Festival in September before the summer holidays kick in. I hope we can see you there. All tickets available via the edtechpodcast.com/festival. Yay! Okay, so it's day two of BET. And a bit bleary-eyed because I got back from the BET Awards yesterday at 1 o'clock, which is late for me these days. But I'm delighted to be here now with Kat Scutt, the Director of Education and Research at the Chartered College of Teaching. So welcome, Kat.
Hi, good morning. Nice to be here.
And thank you very much for my cup of tea as well.
Always a good way to start the day.
Indeed it is. So one of the things I'm doing with the interviews this week is I have this new book from the Tate. And it's quite a fun way just to get to know people very quickly before we delve into the more educational focused stuff. So can you choose a number between 1 and 100?
37.
37.
Never quite sure whether it's more nerve-wracking being asked about education or being asked about, about goodness only knows what comes out of your book.
Tell us about your favourite eccentric features.
Favourite eccentric features of myself?
Yes.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I think lots of people think I'm kind of crazy dog lady because I do have three dogs who are all quite large and tend to feature quite a lot whenever I do Skype calls because they get very excited at the idea of me. They'll hear me talking and want to know what's going on. And of course, they'll come and leap on my lap.
They don't start howling or anything.
Well, one of them, actually, so there's a good story. I can start with that maybe. Actually, one of them is quite a good singer.
Oh, really?
So I actually won tickets to a music festival in 2010 because my dog sang on the radio, on Absolute Radio. And I was a teacher at the time, and this was at sort of 8 o'clock in the morning, and all the kids heard it on the radio on the way into school. So I arrived at school, and they were like, "You were on the radio, your dog was on the radio." And it was a bit of a sort of tale for a while. So he does howl, but only to certain songs.
And in tone as well, which would be amazing. What art do you have on the walls, if you have any art on the walls, for example?
So we live in a 17th century cottage, so we have kind of quite a lot of kind of countryside type stuff, I suppose. Although we didn't have any for a long time, because for 6 years we lived on a narrowboat. And the walls are obviously not, you know, you can't really hang things very easily on those.
Curved.
Because the walls are not sort of flat or vertical. So
that's very interesting. Yeah. I have friends that lived on a narrowboat for a bit. I always liked going around. It's very cosy in the winter.
Yeah, it's perfect. Small space, you can heat it up quickly. What do you have on your wall? I'm going to ask the question back.
Oh, there you go. What do I have? I have a poster from the V&A of Grace Jones for a postmodernism exhibition. And then there's another one which is meant to be like a vintage poster of the Tour de France with loads of men in flat caps watching a cyclist go past. And what was the third thing? Can't remember, we've just switched it around. But there was a map of an old map of Hackney.
Nice. Your house sounds a bit trendier than mine.
So yeah, sounds really, really cliche. Sorry about that. Anyhow, right, now I've got uncomfortable because it's about me, so I'm going to move on. So first question, I guess because of your role and the launch of the Charter College of Teaching, I think I read recently that teachers in the UK receive the fewest hours of CPD in Europe. So I don't know if that's entirely correct, but in your opinion, is that a kind of something that you perceive to be correct? And also, so how bad, can you contextualise how, you know, what the CPD situation is in the UK and what we can do about it and all of those kind of things?
I think it's a really interesting question, and it seems quite cliche to start with a conversation about all definitions, but I suppose there is a really interesting question about what constitutes CPD. I definitely think that there is an issue with teachers not having enough time for CPD, so that, you know, as a kind of starting point, I think that's really important. But I've also had really interesting conversations with people whose schools and school trusts provide incredible opportunities for their teachers to develop, but when they asked their teachers how much CPD they get, they sort of said, oh, none, because they thought of CPD as I've gone on an externally run course, yeah. And that's what CPD is. And of course, all of the things that we're seeing at the moment from a lot of the work that's being done is that the most effective professional development is often much more to do with being able to collaborate and work in your own context, opportunities for coaching, mentoring and things like that. But we haven't quite yet got the culture of recognising those necessarily as CPD. And when you think of, again, a CPD budget, it's about, oh, what can I spend on a course and travel and inset and cover for teachers. So I think there's an important starting point there in what we know about high quality CPD and what the requirements for that are.
Is there something there about, so that's recognising it within the school, but is there a way of somehow documenting the sort of more informal ways of CPD so that teachers start to think, okay, that is part of the whole picture as well?
Absolutely. And again, there's been kind of discussion around terminology and CPD and CPDL and all sorts of different ways of talking about that, but I think it is really important for teachers to understand the things that are likely to make a difference and to be able to reflect on those. And there's also something important about not just kind of abstractly selecting a thing to do, but thinking about what it is that they want to develop in their practice and the things that might guide them to do that. As part of our new Chartered Teacher Programme, which we had the launch event for on Saturday, the participants have to create a sort of plan for their professional learning for the year based on a self-evaluation that they do, identifying three areas they want to develop and thinking about what they can do about those, thinking very widely about development opportunities, and then sort of logging as they go through what they've done and reflecting on whether that's worked well, which is certainly an interesting sort of smallish scale pilot for us to see, is that something that works more widely? We know that lots of schools are obviously doing things like that anyway, sometimes tied into sort of school development plans, sometimes tied into their internal HR processes and things like that, but we're quite interested to see when teachers are reflecting that on that for themselves, what that looks like and how useful that is.
Interesting. And then I know from your previous roles we spoke about, you know, how you've developed online platforms for learning. So within your role at the Chartered College of Teaching as well, how much does online play into that, and how can we sort of use tech for the good in that way?
I think actually technology for teachers is probably one of the most exciting areas. And I was actually, I know we were both at the BET Awards last night, talking to people on my table about the fact that there isn't a sort of category explicitly for technology that's used more for teachers rather than in sort of integrated in terms of administration or in terms of learning for pupils. I know there was one of the SKE programmes from the TES Institute was up for secondary award, but obviously, I mean, of course it has an influence on learning, but it's that one step that's slightly removed. And I think that in a way misses a trick, because I think it's hugely important for teacher learning, and we certainly see that happening quite naturally and organically through things like social media, where teachers are finding a huge amount of power about being able to work together to share, develop and challenge each other's practice. And for the Chartered College, because we are nationwide and indeed beyond the nation, having online learning is really important for us, and also drawing on the fact that teachers need to be able to access that whenever they choose to. We're obviously not in control of what their schools do in terms of how much time they might give them to do that during the day, so we try to do as much as possible that's flexible for teachers to do when suits them. So really focusing on that, and as you mentioned, I've done a lot of that in my last work, last job. I launched a MOOC with FutureLearn for teachers in my last role, and we're really looking at what we can do around that, learning about what makes effective online learning for teachers and how people can be engaged and help to challenge their practice, and bringing together that really kind of collaborative approach to professional learning online. So yeah, very much something we're focusing on over the coming year.
It's interesting, you mentioned the use of Twitter. I was having a conversation at the end of last night's event, and someone was talking about, you know, some of the older associations that were representative of teachers and how their kind of relevance has waned as, you know, younger teachers now, you know, do go to people online on Twitter for that kind of information and guidance, where perhaps they used to go to sort of centralised body. But so yeah,
that's interesting, isn't it? Because it does change the kind of sense of the seat of power, almost, in the sense of what knowledge is, and
yeah,
understanding that actually you can have a voice and that there's not necessarily just a single voice of an expert that can't be challenged. And I think that's really important. And it's interesting you referenced, you know, younger teachers, which obviously this idea that people who've grown up with social media might use it more has a certain extent of truth, I imagine. But I've certainly seen that it's very much people who, any age and any level of experience, who are wanting to embrace the opportunity to reach outside of their schools to talk to people they've never spoken to before. Hugely powerful examples of collaboration. One of the things that I've really liked to see recently is people sort of using Twitter as a way to collate things like multiple choice questions for their subject areas, so that rather than teachers all independently creating question sets, they're doing those together that can be shared, and it's a huge kind of time saver, and that's really powerful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's a fallacy as well that sometimes people think that all teachers are on Twitter, and they're absolutely not as well. So
that is also true.
Yeah, it's kind of remembering how to speak to different groups of teachers and using whichever channel they're channel or face-to-face, it doesn't really matter, but making sure that you're speaking to all the different people out there, I suppose.
And I think there's that again links back to the idea of what, you know, what makes professional development. What could you reasonably say, oh yes, I've done this much professional development because I spent an hour doing a Twitter chat, versus I had an hour's conversation with someone in the staff room, versus I went on an hour's training after school, and understanding how those different things might be useful and relevant in different contexts is,
yeah,
I think, a bit of a sort of culture shift.
So when we spoke previously on the phone, you were telling me about your journal. So would you like to speak a little bit about that, and about, you know, what topics you might be covering when you're going forward in your schedule there as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So we launched our peer-reviewed journal last year. We had an interim issue that we put together quite quickly once the organisation had launched, because we wanted to make sure we had something for our members as soon as possible. Then we had our first full edition, which came out in September, and that was focused on assessment, and we were lucky to have that guest edited by Dylan William, and had a fantastic range of articles in there, including some really interesting ones about use of technology to support things like retrieval practice. Adam Boxer wrote for that, and also Jose Picardo wrote about ways that they'd use technology to support that sort of low stakes testing for their pupils, which is really exciting. But lots of other examples of ways that schools and individual teachers had looked quite broadly at assessment and how to improve their approaches to assessment to cut down on the workload brought about by marking whilst actually making processes more effective for their pupils.
That's very interesting. We did an episode on that recently, actually.
Oh,
and a lot on continual assessment and trying to avoid the sort of standardised tests which come in sort of big blocks, and actually removing that and actually just moving towards a system where you're getting continual feedback. But
really interesting.
Pros and cons to all of these things, as usual.
Yeah, and I think it's that question of what and who that assessment is for. You know, the idea that actually it's assessment because we know that being asked to retrieve something that you've learnt is a really good way of sort of strengthening that memory, rather than it being something that has to always be reported on and that everything should be kind of shared with parents all the time. I know I've heard interesting presentations before from people talking about this kind of almost like the online banking approach to education, where as a parent you should be able to go and look at any time at exactly what your child's latest reports are. And I think there's some challenges in that as a conceptualization of what
I always find it weird, like, when, you know, there's some nurseries where you can literally stare at your child whilst they're in situ, and I just think you have to kind of give up a little bit the fact that, you know, you've handed over the care or the education of your child to professionals, and you kind of need to let them get on with it a little bit as well.
Yeah, I can understand that from an analogy. I was looking after my friend's pug while they were on holiday, and they
had, back to the dogs.
We are, it's always the dogs. But they have a video camera that lets them see what it's doing during the day while they're at work. So it's kind of a constant live app on their phone, which is fine. And I
completely understand. It's just the dog at the window waiting for them to come home.
Well, it was then. But then when I was round at their house, and I'd completely forgotten that they could see me, and so then suddenly had this moment of looking at the camera, being like, oh, they can check whether I'm looking after their dog well enough, and it's quite.
And there's audio versions of that you have to be very careful with baby monitors as well, because you don't want to start stressing about, you know, family members whilst the baby monitor's on.
It's tricky because, you know, technology makes so many things possible, but that doesn't necessarily make them desirable in any way.
No.
And there are things for which it's very useful, but we need to be quite critical about our use of tech, not just do it because we can.
So for example, today if we were assessed, we wouldn't be on top form. We've been at the Bet Awards and we'd have a down day. And you can't also, it's kind of, if it's continual assessment, allowing for these dips which don't sort of perhaps reflect your absolute cognition and sort of mastery of a subject, but you're obviously going to have, you know, it's not a linear path of progress.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important point, because, you know, when you're looking at things in a slightly more collated fashion, you can see those kind of the peaks and troughs are somewhat smoothed out. But I can completely imagine a sort of panic setting in with parents when they see one assessment that for whatever reason has not necessarily gone as well as the child's would usually. And that's, you know, that's quite problematic, because if you're expecting a particular outcome, it does become this expectation of learning being very linear, and that you should be able to see a clear sort of line of progress at all times across all different areas, ignoring the fact that actually within, across subjects or within subjects, there's a huge amount of variability in what they're being asked to do and how they might engage with that and the outcomes they might get.
Absolutely. On the CPD and sort of using online tools and that kind of thing, there's a few companies I know about. So one was Spongy Elephant, who were in one of the categories yesterday, and then there's Make-O-Matic as well. Are you kind of leaning towards sharing some of the tools out there for sort of more bite-sized online learning for teachers, or will you develop your own one, or have you got any views on that?
It's probably more about pointing and bringing together things that are there already. We see ourselves very much as working with other partners across education to connect teachers to things that are useful for them. Obviously, there are things where we're developing our own specific content as well, for example, around our Chartered Teacher Programme. But really, it's about being able to kind of point to things that might be useful and effective and help teachers to identify things that will be useful for them. And I think that's, again, this really important point, that professional development, when we're thinking of courses, whether online or face-to-face, is only useful or only as good as whether it meets the needs that you have. And so that kind of first piece of how you select something for your needs is really important, and not just kind of looking for things that maybe agree with what you're already thinking, that just kind of make you think, yeah, great, I'm doing right. And sometimes that's fine, but sometimes you want things that maybe stretch and challenge slightly more to make you reflect on and develop your practice. So that really careful first stage of thinking through what you might engage with.
So is that framework for identifying where your gaps are, is that available on your website, or to do the top three, or is it something that listeners can go and look for?
Well, at the moment it's just for our chartered teachers who have just started the programme. But one thing that is worth, we've just launched this week, which I can mention, is something fantastic that was a self-evaluation tool for teachers and schools around the extent to which they're engaging with research evidence. And that was something that was put together by Louise Stoll, Toby Greeny, Steve Higgins, Chris Brown, lots of other people who I'll be in trouble for not mentioning, Mike Caldwell and various others. They put that together off the back of a large-scale research project they did for the Department for Education, looking at the extent to which schools are research engaged. And they created this sort of toolkit afterwards, which allows you to assess where you're at and has some really useful links and areas for reflection to think about how to move that forward. So I'd absolutely recommend that kind of thing. And obviously other organisations like Teach Development Trust do very interesting things around CPD. Yep. And we're working closely with them to see what we can do more widely to help teachers to identify and engage with useful professional development and reflect on their own strengths and needs.
Perfect. Well, fantastic. Thank you, Kat. And if people want to connect with you, are you on Twitter, or what's the best way for people to find out a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter at Kat Scutt, not Cat's Gut, which I know it sounds like, but
it's a bit of a tongue twister.
It is, yes. again, always used to make the students laugh at school when they found my name. But absolutely there. Or you can find out from the Chartered College website, which is chartered.college. There's lots of ways to get in touch, and always really keen to hear from people about what they're doing, to hear best practice examples, and to have contributions, especially to our journal. We have a call for papers out at the moment for people to write for our next issue around building effective learners. So that's, again, all on our website, and we'd love to have examples for that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Aldo, hello.
Hi, Sophie.
We first, I guess, interacted on a what was then UKTI webinar a few years ago, and we're now here in the Educate part of BET Futures at BET 2018. The first thing I'm doing with all my guests this week is you have to pick a number between 1 and 100, and then I'm going to ask you some random questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
Sure.
So what's
your
number?
The number 27.
27, that's good. Weirdly enough, even though there's 100, people keep picking the same page. What do you not mind spending a lot of money on?
Good food.
Oh, that's a good answer. Any favourite restaurants out there?
Well, we have a new favourite. It's Gautier in Soho. It's a very nice restaurant.
Okay.
I think it's a great lunch place. So, it is pricey, but they give you like a full tasting menu, and it's really
nice.
Like an adventure. It's a very culinary adventure. I highly advise it.
Is it French cuisine? Yeah, French.
It's like a black truffle risotto and kind of those things, but definitely nice to go to.
What frightens you?
I think not achieving what I want to achieve. I'm afraid that, you know, I'm gonna miss the target or not get there.
Life goes very quick, doesn't
yes.
it? That's for sure. And what makes you angry?
My own impatience.
Yeah.
I'm sometimes really fed up with myself that I don't get that some things take time, that you don't get there immediately, that it takes resilience, discipline, and, you know, patience to get somewhere.
Well, on that note, so that must come into play a lot being an entrepreneur. So have you had startups before this one, or is this your first?
This is my first one.
Yeah.
But in a previous life, I had the great opportunity to work with founders for a venture capital fund.
Okay.
So I worked at a corporate venture capital fund set up by Macmillan Publishers.
Yeah.
It's now called Springer Nature. And they were working with startup initiatives. I was not the founder, so my job title was business development from a financial angle. So I co-wrote their business plans and thought of strategies on how to grow their company. And because, you know, while doing that, I discovered that I had founder's envy. I was like, oh, this is so awesome. I want to do this myself. So after 3 years of working with these founders, which was absolutely awesome, I needed to go because I was like, okay, I'm going crazy. Someone...
The impatience kicked in.
Yes, exactly.
I think I had something slightly similar, which was working in tech events for 10 years, and you'd be sat in the room listening to these really amazing presentations, and those ideas would start to seep in.
Yes.
And then at some point, you're just like, right, I've got to...
Yeah, you've got to go for it. You've got to jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's... you've had a similar, of course, experience. Yeah.
So tell us about Teach Pitch. When did it start, and what's it all about for people that are listening in?
Yeah, so the journey started while I was still working at that corporate venture capital fund. And I was always very passionate about education and had set up, I was already running an education charity for over 10 years, whereby we just gathered up on fundraising and gave money to schools to build classrooms for quality education. So it was a fairly transactional thing, you know, sport events, parties, whatever, gathering money and then giving the money to small and local projects I think we did around 30 projects and, you know, giving them money to further build schools. Because I was so close to technology, I saw kind of the changes that technology could bring along, and that basically brought me the idea of TeachPitch, whereby we could say, hey, we can help in a more structural sense if we apply technology correctly. And then started toying with the idea, like, okay, how do we help teachers in these local areas, in these, you know, often far away from, you know, bigger cities? How can we help them? And then, you know, after doing some market research, we thought, yes, you can help them by giving them the proper resources. Because all of them said, like, we would love to learn more, we just don't know where to look.
That's pretty interesting. And so what were some of the geographical contexts of those people that you were speaking to?
Yeah, so there were, I think, so we did 30 projects in 20 countries. So it was from the Far East to Africa, you know, to Europe, to the United States, to, we did projects in the United Kingdom as well. So, and because that's really what struck a tone, was like they all said, like, we want to have the ability to learn more, give us the resources to learn more. That basically showed like they didn't know where to look because they were confused by, you know, this ocean of resources that the internet is. So yeah, that's what got the idea started. Like, everyone is confused, regardless of whether we're dealing with teachers in emerging economies or, you know, in economies that are growing and are already there. They, you know, each teacher had that problem. And that got us hooked on the idea of TeachPitch to help teachers with resolving the problem of information abundance, helping educators find the most relevant content at the right moment in time.
And so give us an example of some of the content on your platform that might be relevant for some of the teachers listening in.
Sure. So we curate content really designed for teachers. So we really want to contextualize it so that an educator can find it. And that means that we don't only curate academic-specific content, so it's not only subject-specific content, it's also content focusing on new teaching methods and strategies, school and classroom management, ICT and new technologies. Because we focus on the educator, we don't really exclude any educational level. So we have teachers in the early phases, from kindergarten up to university. As long as you're an educator and as long as you want to kind of make a difference as an educator, I'm sure we will have content for you. If we look at our statistics, then the content often queried is anything on a professional development level. That's most popular specifically in territories like the United States or the United Kingdom. If you look at markets like India, for instance, which is our second largest market, then still content as mathematics, chemistry, science, or English is very popular. So there is a regional difference there.
And how many languages have you got going on there? How many languages is it?
No, it's all in English. So it's all focused on the curation of high-quality English resources. Yeah. But it can be applied in any country that has English as a curriculum, which are quite a few.
Interesting. And so what are you talking about mostly at this event at BET 2018?
Yeah, so we're here mainly to talk about our newly introduced online tutoring program. Because we were founded in 2014. For over 3 years, we've been really focusing on getting our curation right, getting, you know, really serving our teachers and helping them find the most relevant content at the right moment in time. And in October last year, when we met at VocTech event of UFI, we introduced a program for online tutors. We see that the teachers who sign up to TeachPitch sign up for two reasons. A, they either want to learn more to find the most relevant content, or B, they want to teach more. And it's specifically for those teachers who want to offer their services to other teachers that we've set up this program, because we're happy to help them market their services, to offer them an environment where they can teach one another for teacher training. We think that that's a great initiative, peer-to-peer learning. But we do want to make sure that the teacher is good for what they have to offer. So we train them, we interview them, we test them, and then train them and certify them so we feel good about them offering their services on TeachPitch. Together with the certificate, you know, they can also use that certificate for further career advancement if they will.
So that's not just teaching CPD or professional development support to other teachers, but it's also teaching students on the platform, is it?
It's also teaching students, because meanwhile we've also partnered with One World Education, which is a very big education organization in China who operates in hundreds and hundreds of schools there, who has built an app with the aim to train over 1 million students in China. And the need in China is mainly based on anything that has to do with international exam preparation. It's kind of in any field, but also, of course, English conversation skills, English grammar. So lots of the appetite for these students to be trained in those fields is very specific, and we're very happy to be working with them.
Yeah, I think someone just told me at lunch that, and I'm not sure if this is correct, but there are 940,000 state schools in China. I don't know if that sounds about right.
Yeah, there are dazzling numbers there. It's out of proportion for us to understand. It's off the scales, so it's always like numbers that you wouldn't believe.
And in your interaction with schools there, is that primarily state schools, or is it sort of British and American schools in China, or what's the kind of mix there?
It's both. Through our partner One World, again, we are very fortunate to have connections in both types of schools, because they have been working already for years on forging those deals. They also work with government.
A One World Aid Chinese organization.
They are, yes. Yeah. So so they have lots of contacts in both state schools as well as private schools.
Yeah.
They work a lot with local educational offices that again represent 20 or so schools in a specific district. Yeah. So they're really focused on building relationships with them. So, and our technology goes into those schools via them.
And then what's some of your most memorable conversations this week?
The most memorable conversation is, I think, again, presenting to Chinese delegation who were brought together by the British Embassy and the Department for International Trade. So we met at the Millennium Hotel on Gloucester Road. Well, first of all, the Department of International Trade gave us lots of praise, which was
always helps
yeah. and was not needed, but really great. So they presented us as a success story in China. And then we got a keynote talking to the people about what it is that we're doing and what we're trying to achieve. After that, there was a great networking session whereby we really spoke to, you know, the people who were there and, you know, people from running very big universities to the head of education at Baidu to, you know, the Chinese government, you know, talking to them and talking to them about how product could work. So I would say that's the most impressive.
Yeah.
But I've always also really enjoyed talking here at BET to teachers who basically are interested in an online tutoring program. A great teacher from North Wales who said, well, I have Wednesday off and I was looking for this additional source of income.
Yeah.
Your program is perfect for me because that's exactly what we created it for. And seeing that that matches there is for us a really great thing.
So that's really interesting. Just because anecdotally speaking, I have friends that are teachers and whether they're male or female have come to the age where they're starting to have children. And I know that they're always thinking about, you know, I love teaching, but the sort of traditional aspect of going in and being a teacher or an assistant head teacher doesn't necessarily work. But and then I've sort of told them before about these kind of tutoring services, but I think they find it hard to identify, you know, exactly what's out there. But yeah, I mean, so you've had interest from UK teachers that would like to supplement their income.
I think
in that
because our primary aim, I mean, it's a certified online tutoring program. So where a teacher might be maybe a little bit disappointed is that we really offer kind of a full year of, you know, training. You know, we give them the digital tools, we have evaluation moments, we organize webinars, and we certify. And for that, there's a charge. There's a one-off charge of around £30 per year that a teacher has to pay to get certified. But after that moment, the teacher can offer, and we will help them offer his or her services on the platform. Feedback that we had thus far is that people really want it because they want to reschool themselves as a digital teacher, as an online tutor. It is a skill.
Yeah.
It is not, you can't just go on Skype and say...
Establishing that
connection, making sure that everything works, but also making sure that what you have to offer is tutor worthy.
I can't remember who it was I was interviewing, but I mean, I spoke to VIP Kids and others about this kind of thing, and it is a real skill in terms of, you know, you're managing multiple things. So you're managing, you know, information being on the screen, trying to establish that connection with the student. So, you have to be a sort of, both have that aptitude as a teacher, but also on the digital side as well, and just managing multiple kind of inputs at one time.
At the same time, yes, correct. Yeah, it is not an easy thing. And specifically the teachers we're talking to, these are teachers with 20 plus years of classroom teaching experience. And they basically say, so when we ask them, why are you interested to become an online tutor? They tell us, well, it's the future. We want to be part of the future. We want to have this outreach through internet. And this is the way they know how to contribute. So I think it's a very powerful thing.
Can I ask those people that are having those conversations with you, are you noticing a sort of average age? Are they, what kind of age are they where they're saying it's the future and they want to get involved?
I think it's two levels. So it's one, indeed, people that are very experienced, that are kind of looking for new things to explore as, you know, teachers with 20 plus years of experience. On the other hand, you have aspiring teachers or people who just started becoming a teacher who basically say, okay, you know, I want to move ahead. I want to kind of, you know, get the certificate to apply for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing to, you know, for instance, get hired by an international school or to travel and to work for a school there or a school there to show that I have international experience. So it's a little bit of both. We have both types, really.
And the big question that if educators are listening in, they'll want to know, well, how much money can I make from this, as well as enhancing the teaching and learning aspect of it? But, you know, what's your rate in terms of teachers listening in if they do become tutors?
Yeah, so our team can help you advise. If you don't have any experience, our team can help you advise on kind of what tutoring rates to charge. But, you know, you don't have to follow our advice. We work a little bit. I don't know if you know the platform Upwork.
You don't set it. They set it.
No, they can set it. They can set it. Now, naturally, you need to accommodate to a demand, right? So if you ask $300 an hour, that might be a tricky thing to ask for.
But that is quite interesting. So I was thinking, you know, if you're that teacher with 20 years experience, do you get the same base rate as someone who's new to the profession? But that's not necessarily the case then, so they can set that.
That's up to the teacher. We can advise and we can steer it, but at the end of the day, it's important that the demand comes in, right?
Yeah.
For the B2B project, so the project with One World, there might be a set standard. We're still working on what that will exactly be. But if you just want to offer it on a marketplace, then feel free to offer it as a marketplace. It's a little bit like Upwork.
Mm-hmm.
So Upwork, you can charge whatever you like for offering your services. Now, naturally, we're going to drive it so you'll get a demand out of it. So we will advise you a little bit. And it's like, here's what you would charge. Here's what an average teacher or student will spend on kind of you offering your services. But for now, we're not putting a maximum on it because we feel... You know, who are we to judge? If you want to charge £300 an hour, you can. But you know, it might be harder to get an appropriate client for it.
And are you seeing it predominantly used for language learning, or are there any? Is it a whole range of subjects, or?
It's a whole range of subjects. So we currently have teachers that offer courses in philosophy, geography, software engineering. The main focus is indeed in You almost need to think the two words, you put two words in front of it, so teaching in.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching in English, teaching in software engineering. So we also encourage the teachers to, next to just offering the course plain, also create a component whereby you can speak to other teachers if they're curious to teaching in that specific field as well.
Okay.
So it has that professional development angle, should an aspiring teacher be curious about that. And we're sure they are, because in the Far East we've already had demands like, well, how do I become a teacher here, and how do I do this, and how
Got
do I
you.
Do that? So there is demand for
so
that as well.
So there's an exchange in the teaching community online about what it's like to be a teacher in the US or in the Middle East or in China or in England.
Yes.
Yeah. I can see how that's... Yeah.
I think, you know, if plainly said that a teacher in the UK wants to make extra money through TeachPitch, then I know it will be advantageous for them, because there's a high demand coming from China for the services of a British teacher.
Yes.
Because of the English, because of, you know, conversation skills or whatever. So you would have an advantage definitely in offering your services on the platform.
So you went on the Chinese delegation previously.
I did, yes, yeah.
Are you a big reader?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Well, one of the questions I always ask on the podcast is what books have inspired you, or, and I don't know if on that trip, you know, you probably didn't have time to read there, but if there are any books that you've particularly gone back to, and it doesn't have to be education focused, but that, you know, books or authors or thinkers that, you know, you have honed your way of thinking.
Yes. Well, I've just finished reading for the second time consecutively in a row, Principles by Ray Dalio.
Okay.
So Ray Dalio is the founder of Bridgewater Associates, which is a multi-billion dollar hedge fund. Ray Dalio himself, he made over 17 billion. I think that's his personal net worth. So, you know, needless to say, he's a very successful businessman. But regardless from that, he's very comfortable. But his book Principles is I think has changed the way I look at business. It's a very big sober upper in terms of understanding business and understanding growing businesses. The book for me is it screams like get over yourself.
Mm.
And this is how a business works. It has encouraged me to embrace reality, to look at how the world works and to apply yourself from there. And he gives lots of very good lessons learned. So I couldn't recommend the book any more than...
And remind me of his name again?
Ray Dalio.
Ray Dalio.
And the book
okay.
is called Principles.
Wonderful.
So that would be definitely my number one. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's about getting out of the way, isn't it? So
it's getting it out of the way, and also kind of, he also basically says, we're nothing special. We're just, you know, we're just doing something, and we love to get things to the next level. And how do you apply yourself in doing that?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you understand other people? How do you... And he gives so many rules, and it kind of, you know, how to make an organization work or not work. And it's not like you would expect, it's not like someone who does extensive name dropping or says like, oh, it was with my dear friend, the former president, and so and so. Not at all. It's the complete opposite. It's like, you know, I've you know, what I can do, everyone can do it. But, you know, here's how I did it.
Here's
a few tips on how to
do
it. But he basically says, like, everyone, you know, the challenge is yours. Go for it. Do it. And, you know, big empowering book. So it's
that does sound good. Well, yeah. If people want to find out more about you, they can obviously go to the Teach Pitch website.
Definitely.
Are you also a Twitter person?
I'm a Twitter person. So Teach Pitch, you could find me there. You can find us on Facebook. You can sign up to the platform or send me an email at aldo@teachpitch.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Aldo.
Thank you so much, Sophie, once more.
This week's episode. Thanks for listening in. If you're interested in EdTech as a teacher, co-founder, developer, or hirer, come along to our next meetup at Runway East in London on Monday, April the 30th, 2018, on hiring and retaining talent, including advisory networks. All details are in the show notes, and it would be great to have you there. Beyond April, we're looking to London Tech Week. Go and check out their programme, which will feature more EdTech content this year and runs in London 11th to the 17th of June 2018. Engineerhere.co.uk is also worth a peek, including a whole raft of events in East London focused on the Year of the Engineer, including our very own festival and the UK Robotics Week. If you think that's all a bit London-centric, take a look at Edutech Africa, not until the 9th and 10th of October in Johannesburg. That's all for now. I'm off to meet the sixth formers from 621 to continue in the production of our episode special. Today we are recording with a specialist at Birkbeck on the development of the adolescent brain.